Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, everybody. I'm Ashley Banfield. Welcome to Drop Dead Serious. I have such a treat for you. Massive news, right? Happening with the Menendez case, the judge just making a decision that they qualify for resentencing and saying 50 to life, which really means, because they were under 26 when the crime happened, that they get a earlier shot at parole, and they're meeting with the parole board on June 13th. I had these fabulous interviews that I conducted. One of them is with Ana Maria Baralt, who testified in the case today where the judge made this decision, tearfully testified how important she feels it is as their first cousin and someone who speaks with them every day, she said, that the feelings of the family members are taken into account. The family members are not just family members of Eric and Lyle. They are family members of Jose and Kitty, the victims. And they say they want the cousins released, even though they are victims of the crimes that Eric and Lyle committed against their loved ones. It mattered. Ana Maria had such a great conversation with me about why this has been such a passion project, how she feels about the case, what she's looking forward to, and what she knows about the effects on Eric and Lyle. Again, she talks to them every single day. So I do have a bonus episode all about the decision, so make sure you check that out. But in the meantime, here's my conversation with Eric and Lyle Menendez's cousin, Ana Maria Baralt. What are you expecting to happen?
There's going to be a lot of lawyers arguing is what I'm expecting to happen. And some of it will be in chambers. So it's called in camera, where I won't be a part of it. Any press that is in the courtroom, they won't be a part of it. And that will be an argument about the CRAs. So that's the comprehensive risk assessment, part of the risk assessment that was ordered by the governor. And really,
that's that important. Like, let's make sure that our listeners and viewers know that the comprehensive risk assessment is that very, very important deep dive that the parole board is doing into everything Eric and Lyle, how they've been while they've been in prison, you know, what they might be like when they're out, what kind of support systems they have. And it is comprehensive. It's exactly that.
Kind of. Yes, the actual clemency process is comprehensive. The CRA as a document is not. It's a one sliver of that process, right? And it has the psych evals, and there's a lot of private information in it, right? And it is not something that is generally done for a resentencing process, right? It comes later, right? So let's say Joe Schmo is up for resentencing. They meet in front of the judge. And that judge says, yes, I believe in resentencing. I believe that they're going to be allowed to go to parole. Then the parole process starts, and that's when the CRAs are produced. Okay? We happen to have the CRAs early because of a different track, because the governor had initiated this process for clemency. They're not technically part of the resentencing process. That's sort of putting the cart before the horse. That's end up later.
But question for you. I know it was, and the last time we were in court, it was so secretive, but have you had a chance to look at the comprehensive risk assessment?
No, this is all, it's confidential. So that's, I haven't seen it. At this point, all of the lawyers have seen it. And
including Eric and Lyle's lawyer.
Yes. So now.
But they can't share it with you guys.
No. It's still a confidential document, right? That said, I have been assured by everybody who has seen it that there is nothing in it to be worried about.
Like, you're good to go.
Like, this is not something that we are afraid of. The problem, the reason that we didn't want it to happen on April 17th is that our lawyers hadn't seen it yet. Right. So only one side had seen it. So as a witness, you know, I would be testifying and I would be getting cross-examined by somebody who had seen things that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, basically like a discovery process that was only half done.
Right. Like, that's not fair. That was not setting us up for to have a really honest, truthful discussion about resentencing.
So this is great. I mean, you and I had a conversation about a month ago, and things have changed since because you now have the confidence, based on what your lawyers have seen, that this CRA, this assessment, is not something to fear.
It's not something to fear.
Like, what else? What else is a roadblock now at this point?
Well, I mean, Ashley, Lord knows the DA's office will come up with more roadblocks. I mean, that there seems to be no shortage of roadblocks and delay tactics.
Like, you live this, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, where this case is concerned. So I hate to jinx it and be like, what else could happen? Because
But what's interesting, Anna Maria, just like to get into the weeds a little bit,
sure,
is that, you know, every time Nathan Hochman has brought up what your side would say is a roadblock, what his side would say is a concern, it seems as though it's diminished in its power in this particular process. It doesn't feel as though he has the full weight of what would normally be the DA's office arguing in court. Yeah, he'll be there, but he doesn't have all the tools that he wants.
Thank goodness, because if he had the tools that he wanted, we wouldn't even be there, right? He has fought pretty hard to sway public opinion, to sway the judges' opinions, to try and withdraw resentencing
entirely
from the last administration. So I'm grateful that he seems to be, to use one of his terms, kneecapped a little bit in this process.
But how kneecapped? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, one can never know for sure when you're going into a legal process. Nothing's a slam dunk. Even OJ, you know, told us that.
Absolutely.
But what does Mark Garagos, what does the legal team tell you about your moonshot here?
For the resentencing?
Yeah.
That's what you're asking? They seem cautiously confident that at the end of the day, the judge is going to have in front of him all of the information. He will, in fact, have part of the CRAs, which, again, we're not afraid of. There's nothing in there that is scary, from what I have been told. Again, I haven't seen it. You know, and with the judge is going to have all of the information. He's going to know the statute. He's going to know what's involved in resentencing. He's going to see that it's a large part of rehabilitation and their life post-conviction. Right? It's not a relitigation of the original trial.
Right.
So there's a lot of reasons for us to be confident moving into this, knowing that it's the judge's decision. And he seems to be a very fair, even-handed judge.
So then politics always comes into this, right? Yeah. Unless you live in a country where judges are appointed for life, there's no elections. Politics is always an ugly piece of even the law. So at this point, what political downside is there for this judge? I get it for Gavin Newsom, right? I get it. Because there is a sizable group of people, like it's almost a 50-50 if you look at some of the statistics, on those who say they should serve out their sentence, life, no parole, and others who say this is ridiculous, this isn't the 90s anymore. So Gavin Newsom has 50% to lose. But what about this judge?
I don't think the judge... Well, I mean, the judge, of course, wants to make the right decision, right? This is his credibility on the line as a judge, right? So he's going to make sure that he dots all of the I's and he crosses all of the T's. I mean, he has his career to think of as a judge, as somebody who really is a follower of the law. So that works, I believe, in our favor. And just to note, Gavin Newsom, you're right. This was a political risk for him. He did not have to get involved. He did not have to step forward. He did not have to issue the risk assessment and put them on the clemency track at all. And for that, I really applaud his bravery, because that is political risky. That could be politically risky for him. But he's a really big believer in criminal justice reform. And he's a big believer that prisons should be about rehabilitation, not just punishment. So for him to come forward, this is really putting action behind those words. And so I applaud that.
Well, evolution, you know, you could say criminal justice reform or criminal justice evolution, you know.
Absolutely.
I've been in this business for 38 years. And so over my career, I've seen such colossal changes in how we look at cases and juveniles. I mean, even in my career, the Supreme Court has weighed in saying, no, you can't execute kids. No, you can't put kids behind bars automatically for life, no parole. We've learned more about who we are and scientifically what we are. And so how much of that do you think is actually going to play into Eric and Lyle's case? The fact that we have evolved, it's just that politically they are such a headline.
I hope a lot, because if you look at the statute for 1172, which is what is being brought forward, that's the resentencing, the DA-initiated resentencing statute, childhood trauma plays a part because of what we know, right? You're right, there has been an evolution. Brain science is starting to catch up. We're starting to understand that there are actual physical reactions to brains that happen when they're under childhood trauma. Right. And they create sometimes actions that are irrational, but they shouldn't be punished for life. Right. That's why statutes have come along with that. So I hope a lot. I hope that that what we know now in science, that how the law has evolved, will play a huge part, because it should. That's part of the law.
Yeah. I always find it interesting when you have two guys like Eric and Lyle who have been model prisoners. I mean, we don't have to go over their whole, you know, 30 plus years, but they're really exactly what we ask for in the penal system. Our goal is to rehabilitate even those who are in for life, no parole. Our goal is to make them better. Our goal is to make sure that recidivism disappears one day. You know, our goal is not to turn out monsters because their experience has been so catastrophic. And they would be, you know, poster kids for that, because they have been model prisoners. Where do you think someone could make an argument that they're dangerous to me on the street if they're let out? Like, where would that argument even come from? Where have you even heard?
I would love to hear
that other side.
I would love to hear that argument. I don't know. I really don't know how you could make that argument when they have. I mean, Lyle, in 35 years of prison, and we're talking maximum security level 4. They're not there anymore, but they started there for years.
The worst of the worst, the most dangerous people.
The worst of the worst, the most violent people, has never had one violent infraction in 35 years.
Wow.
You're going to tell me that he's going to get released and then commit some violent act? It's absurd. It's absurd. If it hadn't happened now for his entire life behind bars, that's not going to happen.
Do you think this whole case for Nathan Hochman, the current DA in LA, do you think this whole case revolves around his insistence that Eric and Lyle haven't accommodated for lies? He's listed out, you know, a poster of all the lies that he says they haven't accommodated for. These, they haven't made right by these. Is that where this is at? And if Eric and Lyle did do what he wanted, would that change him?
Well, I don't want to get too much into the mind of the district attorney and say what he would or wouldn't do based on what they would or wouldn't do. I will say, though, that most of the lies that he's talking about were cross-examined. You know, they were already addressed. I think what he wants them to do is to say that they made up their defense completely. That's what he wants them to do. And that is not going to happen, because that is not
true. He wants them to refute the fact that they were sexually abused.
That they were sexually abused by their father. And that is.
Then that would be, right? That would be like
it's crazy.
Suicide, because that's the whole case.
And it's not true. That for them to say that would be a lie. That is,
and it wouldn't get them, right? Like, it would be a Pyrrhic victory, because it wouldn't get them to the end goal anyways. Like, you're asking me to say I wasn't sexually abused, therefore, why are we even here for resentencing? Because that's based on the fact that I was young, I was abused, and these things happened. So I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it almost sounds like Nathan Hochman is asking for something that can't happen.
It can't happen. Mostly, it can't happen because they were. And so why would they do that?
Well, even if they wanted to, even if they wanted to say, fine, I'll fall on a sword and I'll lie to accommodate for what you say is a lie.
I'll lie so that you can say I came clean. Right.
But then that would wipe out the process. So what would be the point in it?
You know, and you only have to look at Roy Rosello, who this week, you know, initiated a gigantic lawsuit, civil lawsuit, for the sexual assault that he made at the hands of Jose, as well as his manager at the time. Right.
He did that this week?
Yeah, it just happened like 2 days ago, I think. Yeah,
tell me about it.
Well, I'm not an expert in it. However, I know that he did file, I think it was in the state of Florida he filed it, or New York, I'm not sure. You'll have to go back and research that. Huge civil lawsuit against his longtime manager, the band of Menudo. Wow. And also against, you know, posthumously against Jose Menendez for the assault that he endured in his time in Menudo.
So was that timed, by the way? Is that coincidental that it's this week, the same week as the resentencing hearing, or is it just?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not in touch with Roy Rosello, and I don't believe that he's in touch with Lyle and Eric's lawyers at this point. Like, they're not on his legal team. So I don't know. I am with lawsuits. They take a kind of a long time to build up, and we didn't know there was going to be a delay. He didn't know there was going to be a delay. So
will this be mentioned? Will this lawsuit be mentioned on Friday?
I don't know. That would be a question for Mark. You can ask him that. I don't know. I hope at some point people do start talking about Roy Rosello, because he's been very brave to come forward himself about his story. It's very difficult for men to share when they have been assaulted. It's difficult for women. It's much more difficult for men. And so I really, my heart goes out to him. But you only have to look at him to say, how can you possibly look at that and still say, oh, Lyle and Eric were lying the whole time?
Has Lyle and Eric's team, whatever team in the anthology of what they've been through, have they reached out to Ricky Martin about his time with Menudo?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that question.
Because boy, would that be powerful.
If
you're talking about politics, right? And you're talking about public opinion, and a behemoth like Ricky Martin, if anything, you know, similar happened to him that happened to Roy Rosello, that would certainly change the needle.
I have heard a lot of chatter online about Ricky Martin and what he may or may not have experienced. I do like to caution people, though, that I want to be careful that if he were a victim of sexual abuse, that is his story to tell on his timeline. And he should not be sort of pressured in any way to come forward. That is very difficult. That is very personal. So I would hope that people would give him space to find that journey on his own.
Yeah. You can never inflict, pain on someone for the benefit of others, or even for the justice of others. It's, pain and suffering is a very personal thing, and we accommodate for this in the justice system. It's why you can't be necessarily compelled to testify in all cases about even domestic abuse. Sometimes you can, but generally speaking, prosecutors recognize that that's not something you can force.
Yeah, and why statutes of limitations oftentimes for sexual abuse are longer than other crimes, because it takes people sometimes decades to be able to speak the words.
Or even remember.
Or even remember.
Yeah.
That's right.
We have pretty powerful little mechanisms in our brains to allow us to, forge forward in life. And sometimes that is like an amnesia. I remember hearing, this is such an aside, Anna Maria, but I remember hearing when I was pregnant 20 years ago, and I was so scared about childbirth, that there's like some amnesic effect, physiologically speaking, that women go through so that they'll have another
child. They'll have another one, yes.
I don't know if it's an old wives' tale. I'll be honest with you. I must have researched it and forgot.
That's right.
Hey, tell me about your mom, Terry Brault. I mean, the headline went out that after the last hearing where the prosecutor kind of sprung these crime scene photos on the courtroom unannounced and without any warning to you, the family, the victims, family members, she ended up in the hospital. What's going on? Is she okay?
Yeah, she's home in New Jersey now, thank goodness. She spent a couple of weeks in and out of the hospital in California before she was able to go home.
Wow.
You know, after that date, right, where we had won, essentially, I was out to dinner with my mother and my sister, and the motion to withdraw the resentencing recommendation had been defeated. And we were going to proceed, right? So for us, it was a little bit of a celebratory dinner. I was in a celebratory mood. And I looked over at my mom, and she was just white as a ghost. I mean, she was visibly, I don't even know what words to use. And I was like, hey, Mom, what's going on? You okay? And she said, I never saw the crime scene photos.
She'd never seen them?
She had never seen them. Even though she had been in the courtroom every day of the original trials, The judge, even Judge Weisberg, who was definitely not on our side, had always been careful to tilt those photos to just the jury and to shield the victim's family, right? And my mom's 85. She's not online. I had seen the photos. I'm online. Mm-hmm. You know, I had seen them. She'd never seen them. And that was her brother, who she loved very much. And she was visibly shaken. And it was so sad.
What actually happened the moment that those photos went up on, I'm assuming, a big screen? Like, were you sitting beside your mom?
I was sitting next to my sister, who was next to my mother.
And what happened that moment?
I didn't look at her. Again, I had seen the photos. I didn't realize what was happening to my mother two seats down, right? And, you know, and it came right after they played a little snippet of my father, who passed away in 2020. You know, so it was such an emotional shock to her. But she, you know, at dinner, she was like, she just felt like her whole body just went, like, she was just gutted. Absolutely.
Well, doesn't this sort of prove a point about trauma, right?
Yeah.
30 some odd years later, what trauma can do to you, the physiology of trauma, what it can physically do to you.
Yes.
It can land you in the hospital, a memory, a thought about something terrible that happened to your family can put you in the hospital 30 plus years later. That it sort of proves the point that Eric and Lyle are trying to make as well, that trauma can have a physical effect on you, you know?
Yes, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely, you know, that's a perfect way to frame it.
I have a feeling that your mom 86, 87?
She's 85.
85, okay. I have a feeling that your 85-year-old mom may not have made those connections so quickly as to, you know, to make that happen in the restaurant. You know, my mom is 87. I don't think she would have come up with that kind of
That's
idea.
Right. Yeah, she's not up on the latest brain science, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure, but she was very aware of how she was feeling after it.
I'm so sorry. Please pass on our well wishes to her. And so she will not come back to the courtroom.
No, she's not allowed. I won't let her near. I'm not going to have her in California until all of this is done.
Is that because of, I mean, would she have been here otherwise?
Wanted to be.
Oh,
She wanted to be, but I'm not going to risk. I really don't trust the prosecutors. You know,
because the very next time we were in court,
they got a little bit reprimanded, and then they did it immediately again, where it was within 30 seconds of getting reprimanded, and then they said something horrifying. So I wouldn't risk having her in the courtroom again.
So that I'm completely clear, your mom, Terry Berald, Jose's sister, would have been there this Friday for this resentencing hearing were it not for the trauma she went through the last time. You're now saying, Mom, this is just off limits.
Yeah, off limits.
Oh, that's so sad.
Off limits. She will attend the parole board hearing because that's virtual. And she will be part of that for sure.
Is there a possibility that any of that evidence will be presented at the parole board hearing?
I don't know, but it's because it's virtual, she can mute and she can turn it off for a moment
and look away. But hopefully it doesn't come up quickly. And to that end, I know that you took action against Nathan Hochman and his team for violating, is it Marcy's Law, where you can't do things that deliberately harm victims' family members. What's the status of that action?
So that was simply a complaint. After they did that. And it was mostly just to get on the record that behavior. We don't have a whole lot of, there's just not a lot of recourse for us with that Marcy's Law violation, right? Which states very, very specifically that victims and their families of victims are to be treated with respect and dignity at all times through the criminal process.
And that's a real nebulous, you know,
which is real nebulous.
Yeah.
But also
yeah.
the recourse is very tenuous at best, right? There's not a whole lot that can come out of it. But we did want it on record that they had.
You can have a sternly worded letter.
That's
sternly worded letter.
That's
right?
Exactly, like, that's right. What it. It amounted to a finger shaking, but we'll take it, you know.
So who all is going to be there? And is there strength in numbers when it comes to family members showing up in the courtroom in front of the judge? I mean, I always say it's like a wedding. A courtroom is like a wedding. You have one side that lines up behind defense table, family, friends, et cetera. And you have one side that lines up behind victim's table. And it is like that kind of a demarcation. I wondered if that's important in a case where it's really a bench hearing. There's no jury here. Does it have an impact on the judge to see all the Menendez family members, minus Terry, and I'm sorry for that, lined up behind your, you know, Mark Aragos and the team?
I hope so, because the victim's family is supposed to have a voice in this process. So I hope it does make a difference. I mean, this is a really unusual case, right? Because generally speaking, the victim's family is sitting behind the prosecution. The defense, right? So this is a really different kind of case. But for us, it really matters because this has so much attention on it in a very global way, right? We really want everyone to know how much support Lyle and Eric have, just how much we as a family have already forgiven them and we're so proud of the work that they've done. And I think that's really important for people to see that.
Right. It's important to note for anybody who's listening or watching right now, and they don't know this one very important fact, there is not one living family member of Eric and Lyle Menendez that does not support them being released. There was one up until, within the last year, I think an uncle died, right? One of Kitty's brothers died. And he opposed this. But now there's literally not one living family member, which is so weird, because I always tell people when they find themselves thrust into the world of you know, courtrooms for whatever awful reason they might, this unwelcome club that many of them belong to, the prosecutors are supposed to be your lawyer, basically.
That's right.
They're the lawyer for the people, for all of us, to keep us all safe. But they're also primarily a lawyer for the people who've been affected most, the victims' right. family members, which is why it's so odd that you're not sitting behind, like you said,
That's
Nathan
right.
Hochman and the prosecution's team. To that end, is there any line of communication, is there any conversation at all that happens between the Menendez camp and the prosecution?
Not since Nathan Hochman took power.
It ended, 100%.
It ended. There was one meeting in January 3rd that we pretty much had to beg for an invitation to. Before that, of course, with the previous administration's team, there was communication. We had a victim services person assigned to us with that, you know, because it's very difficult. And I think people, they don't understand what a messy, traumatic thing all of this is for us. It is not black and white. This is very hard. This is very difficult. You know, even as I'm getting these words out, like the tears, like I could cry like that. And because this trauma doesn't go away. So just because we support Eric and Lyle does not mean we are not still victims of this crime. And so the last administration really understood that. We had someone who was assigned to us that was like, hey, listen, was with us every time we had something to go to, even if it was just a matter of sitting with us. Can I get you water? Are you okay? Is there anything, do you have any questions for me about what's about to happen? That kind of thing. That it was
Do you
so
not have that now? You don't have any victims advocacy?
No.
Nothing.
Nothing.
It literally ended with the new DA. You don't even have a victims advocate?
No.
That seems sort of criminal, doesn't it?
And even when we sat down with the DA and six other prosecutors from their team, right, our family came in, no victim services.
But I just thought those were taxpayer-funded services that exist no matter who's in office. Why did that end?
I think that... I told you my dog.
Listen, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of puppy dogs and kitty cats making appearances on podcasts.
Yes.
And I always say Atlas, my 68-pound golden doodle, is right at my feet.
Oh yeah, I got a 1-year-old golden retriever. It's not that great. Not that great at personal boundaries.
But yeah, why do you not have access that every single victim and family member has access to by taxpayer-funded dollars.
Because I think that it was a very inconvenient fact for the DA's office that the victims of this crime are not on their side. You know, that,
wow.
It should not rob us of our rights.
Right, no, that's what I was saying.
This seems like a
case in itself. Like, you could actually petition for that. I suppose you have a lot of fronts that you're busy working on, so it's a little hard.
Yeah.
to open up a new one. Your latest conversations with Eric and Lyle.
They are busy. So the parole board process is very involved. Right. It's very involved. So they are really doing deep dives into their insight statements so that they can really go through that process with as much information as they can. So they can give the parole board as much information as they can in order for them to make their decisions. So they also, you know, Eric's still in school. They've got their programs that they're running. So they are not sitting around sort of humming and hawing about, you know, delays and stuff like that. They're pretty eager for this to keep moving forward. But at the end of the day, if delays mean justice, then delays are what's required.
So their meetings, all of their involvement with the parole board and the comprehensive risk assessment, that's all done. That report is done. It's all over but the waiting?
So no. So remember, so that part of it is done. The psych report, that CRA is done. However, we still have a parole board hearing to go to on June 13th, which is very involved. It's 4 to 5 hours long per brother, right? Where they are going to be asked a million questions by the commissioners that are involved, and where they have to really have clear insight of their crime and what led to them and why, and the programs they have done and how they are hopefully going to contribute to society once they're out.
So they're in prep mode.
So they're in prep mode. Yeah.
And what does prep mode involve?
Lots of meetings, lots of writing, lots of working the programs. You know, Eric and Lyle are pretty amazing people. They've gone through a lot of therapy. They've done a lot of programs themselves. And this is really their opportunity to show it. I think what's going to be really involved is the part we're not going to see. It's going to be the in-chambers dissection of the CRAs, what is allowed in and what is not, and coming in and really agreeing on those things and him ruling also based on the governor's input on what can be used and what cannot.
Yeah. Again, CRA seems like it's pretty clean, so sure, dissect.
Yeah, you know? Bring it. Yeah, exactly.
Bring whatever piece of it that you want. That seems to be where, you know, your family side is confident. It's just always great to talk to you. I really appreciate your candor, and I feel so sad when I speak with you, because sometimes I think that you're very like the child of a marriage where one killed the other, and the husband is on trial, and
That's
he's still your dad.
That's right.
And you still love him, and you want to support him, and he was the person who killed the other most loved being in your world, and that's the same example where you don't know what side to sit on, and you don't know where you belong, and your heart is, you know, at odds with both chambers, you know, either chambers at odds with each other, and I think you're right. I don't think people get that. It's hard to understand. It's hard.
It is.
It's complicated.
I mean, I don't, and without judgment, you know, I wouldn't expect anyone to understand how it feels to be in our family.
Well, we're intrigued and interested and engaged, and we are hoping the best for your family while still understanding that there is a very large group of people out there who feels very differently, and we have respect for them too.
Yeah.
Let's talk again. I best of luck to you on Friday, and give your mom our best too.
Thank you for having me, Ashley.